So I want to pick up in March the 19th, 1924, and this is volume 16. We're going to read some incredibly important passages, and this one, give it a heading, The Passport of Light. The Passport of Light. So the introduction to this is that the light of the divine will contains the all-seeingness, and this is the passport to penetrate everywhere. So this is actually terribly important. Louisa said, I was fusing myself in the immense sea of the divine volition, and my sweet Jesus came out from within my interior in the act of blessing me. Then, after he blessed me, he surrounded my neck with his arms and he said, Daughter, I bless your heart, your heartbeats, your affections, your words, your thoughts, and even your tiniest movement, so that through my blessing, all of them may be invested with the divine power. Now, try and take on board what I've just read. That absolutely everything inside of us is invested with the divine power in such a way that on entering my will, that is, we fuse in the divine will, by virtue of my blessing, they may bring this divine power with them and may have the power to diffuse in all, that's all souls, past, present and future, to give themselves to all souls, and to multiply me for each one so as to give me the love and the glory as if all had my life within them. Okay. So the incredible thing he's talking about is trying to let us see how we can actually affect the human race from within. It's absolutely brilliant. My will is most pure light. That's 1 John 1:5. God is light. 1 John 1:5. And 1 Timothy 6:16. God lives in unapproachable light. 1 Timothy 6:16. My will is most pure light. Now, most pure light doesn't just mean purity. It means the absolute spirituality of the substance. It's totally non-material. It's absolute spirit. Okay, it's most pure light. My will is most pure light. And this light contains the all-seeingness. That's Psalm 139. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your face? And this all-seeingness is the passport to be able to enter into the most intimate hiding places. Watch this. The most secret fibers, the abyss of depths, and the space of the highest heights. In other words, if you're having to deal with something evil, that most pure light can go right into the center of it. I've had a lot of attack from an occultic group here, and it's gone on for years. And it's only recently I learned how to actually deal with it. And it is to fuse in the divine will and to enter into him and to take the shafts of light that are needed for every one of those souls and to put those shafts of light into their souls to dispel their darkness. See, that's going into the depths of their darkness and taking the shafts of God's light. And then I go back into the divine will again and I take flames of the divine love, because God is love, and take a flame of love for each one of these souls to cancel out the hatred and enable them, with in cancelling the darkness and the hatred, help them to come to the light and the truth. It's just something I had to do myself, so I just wanted to illustrate it for you. Is that okay? And when I started doing this, I do it every night now. When I started doing this, I felt this enormous peace. The Lord was saying, it seemed as if the Lord was saying to me, now you're doing the right thing. Now you're dealing with it at the right level. They can't counteract what you're doing because you are enabling the divine light to enter into their darkness and cancel out their darkness, and the divine love to enter into their hearts to cancel out their hatred. So this is what I see here, that it's the passport to be able to enter the most intimate hiding places, the most secret fibers and the abyss of depths, so you can help people to come out of an abyss of sin and darkness and come to the light. I think that's absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's evangelism where evangelism really is. Okay. And it will also enter the space of the highest heights as well. You can penetrate the heavens with the divine light. So this passport has no need of a signature in order to be valid. But it contains this very power within itself, because since it is light which descends from up high. Now, up high is heaven and down low is the earth. OK, since it descends from up high, no one can prevent its step and its entrance. It doesn't matter what we do. We cannot stop the morning light from coming. We cannot do it. The light is all pervasive. And I mean, if you blocked all of this house, it's everywhere else. It's just, we cannot stop the light. So learning how to send shafts of light into souls is massive. Okay? Because they can't stop it. They don't even know it's coming. And you send flames of divine love into souls, they can't stop it. Even if they wanted to, they couldn't stop it because they can't see it coming. And so the Lord is saying, I don't need permission. I just think this is plain brilliant, you know. this passport has no need of a signature in order to be valid. It contains this very power within itself. Because since it is light, which descends from up high, which is heaven, no one can prevent its step and its entrance. And besides, it is king of everything. The divine will is what is the source of everything. If you I can write this down, because it's not in the book you're looking at. Volume 11, May the 5th, 1916. Write it on your page, this page here. Okay. So it's volume 11 and it's May the 5th. So that's 05 and it's 1916. Why do I want you to write that down? Because you'll read the words, the Father himself is the divine will. That's where you'll read those words. The Father himself is the divine will. And what you're reading here... What you're reading here is that the divine will is light. So you're bringing God himself into these souls. I think that's fantastic. I think that's absolutely fantastic. So that, therefore, the divine will and this divine light is king, naturally. He's Lord. He's king of everything and it holds dominion everywhere as creator and Lord. Therefore, watch this now. Place your thoughts, your words, your heartbeats, your pains, your whole being in circulation within my will. Now we need to actually action that. And there's just a time every day when I do it, and that is I'm in bed. And, you know, before you actually just slumber down, I make sure that the thoughts, the words, the actions, the movements, every single thing, I actually go to the trouble of naming them. And I want to place them all in you so that your passport of light can go out to all souls. And doing it at night for me is special because that's the time when sin is worse than it is during the day. So place your thoughts, your words, your heartbeats, your pains, your whole being in circulation within my will. Leave nothing inside yourself. Hand it all over. So that with the passport of light of my will and with my divine power, you may enter into each act of the creature and may multiply my life in each one of them. Isn't that absolutely brilliant? Oh, how happy I will be in seeing that by virtue of my will, the creature fills heaven and earth with as many lives of mine for as many existing creatures. So the light of the sun goes to the whole earth at the same time. Everybody gets it, the good and the bad and the indifferent. He tells us to enter into the divine will and to put all of us in all of him. And because of things like this that I just simply say to him, I want to fuse all of me in all of you. I save myself doing the list all the time. Okay. So if I fuse all of me in all of you all the time, then it means that you're allowing him to do this action all the time. Because you can't be saying words all the time. Life isn't like that. You've got to get on with living. Okay, but you can actually get the action done. Is that okay? And therefore, the Lord will use this action of yours to reach out to absolutely everybody. I think that's brilliant. I mean, it's beyond brilliant, isn't it? We can hardly take it on board. So Louisa said, she then does what the Lord says. I abandon myself in the supreme volition, that is your fuse. And going around within the divine volition, I made my thoughts, my words, my reparations, etc., etc., flow in each created intelligence and in all the rest of human works. And as I did my acts, Jesus was formed in them. Oh, how beautiful and enchanting it was to see many Jesuses where the passport of light of the eternal will passed by. Now, you know, of course, that it's according to the various dispositions of people. So some people will receive more and some people will receive less. So the reason why I pray for these occultic people every night is that they might be only able to take the tiniest, tiniest photon of light at any particular time. But if I keep sending them, the photons of light keep increasing. And they mightn't be able to take an awful lot of love. But if I keep sending them, the fire will eventually ignite. And you mightn't get them all. But even if you got one completely, wouldn't that be an incredible thing? So you need to just keep doing it. Okay. Then afterwards, Louisa said, I found myself inside of myself and I found Jesus clinging to my neck and clasping the whole of me. In other words, he's so grateful that she's doing this for the whole of humanity. He seemed to be making feast as if I were the cause of the multiplication of his life to give him the honour and the glory of so many divine lives. And so I said to him, my love, it doesn't seem real to me that I could multiply your life. Now, what the Lord is doing there is getting Louisa to voice how we feel. If I say these words, how can it be that it's having this effect? So it's not really Louise's problem. It's actually ours. It doesn't seem real to me that I could multiply your life to give you the great honour of so many divine lives. And besides, you're present everywhere anyway. That's Psalm 139. And not only is it Psalm 139, the divine will is in everything and in everyone. Therefore, it is by virtue of yourself that this life arises in each act, not because of me. Now, Louisa is right, and so is Jesus. Louisa is right that it's all his work. And then Jesus says, but I need your cooperation. I need you to be able to do work this through. She said, I remain always the little child who is good at nothing. But Jesus said, my daughter, everything you say is right. I am everywhere. But it is, how is he everywhere? Do you know what I mean? So he said, I'm everywhere in my power, immensity and all-seeingness that allows me to be everywhere. That is, in his divinity, of course he's everywhere. But it's not the love and the acting of the creature in my will that makes me be everywhere. So this is what he wants, is that the body of Christ joins him. Okay. And multiplies me. But when the soul enters into my will, it is her love. Now notice the emphasis on the love, that you actually care about the rest of the human race enough to do this. It is the love, it's her acts that, being filled with the divine power, make my life arise according to how her acts are done, are more or less extended. Now notice that we can limit it. You know, if you're praying for an individual and you forget to add the rest of humanity, it's very limited, and that's not what he wants at all. In the divine will, the Lord has told us many times that he loves the individual as much as he loves the whole lot. Okay, but he loves the whole lot as much as he loves the individual. All right, so even if you are praying, and I'm saying this because there are lots of requests for prayer coming in, and I fear that you only concentrate on the one that's named, whereas that person should actually represent the whole of humanity, that whatever we're praying, we pray for them all. And it's past, present and future as well. Okay, that's why the prayers can be more or less extended according to our understanding of what we're actually doing. Okay. So this is the reason for my feast, in seeing that the creature takes of my own. Of my own is not very good English. So the creature takes from me. We take it out of him. And gives me my love, my glory, and even my very life. My contentment is so great that it's not given to the creature to understand it while she lives in exile. So we can't understand the immensity of this. But she will understand it in the celestial fatherland when she sees herself repaid with as many divine lives for the ones she formed on earth. So that'd be quite a cortege to have, wouldn't it? Okay. So that's a massive piece, and it's something that needs to be put into action, you know, more than anything else. So March 22nd, 1924. The necessity to write everything, because only the Lord knows what he's trying to communicate. And something that Louisa thinks may not be important because of where she's at, she doesn't realise can be make all the difference to somebody trying to get on their feet. So after I had told the confessor what is written above, Louisa said, he said that he was not convinced about it. In other words, it was all a very new way of doing things. And that if this were true, on that morning, one should have seen the whole world changed. Now, the mistake that the priest is making is that I've just said, according to Louisa, that this prayer enters into all hearts. And the priest said, magic, it should change all hearts. But I said, no, no. They might only be able to take one drop and then another and then another. So you've got to keep repeating it. So all of us doing this will have a much greater effect. But we may not see the fruits, because you know how many drops of water does it take for a plant to produce its fruit? We couldn't count them, could we? And we don't realise how much action has got to go on in the soil for that plant to actually receive life from the soil. So it's a continuous thing. So we plant in the spring and we get the fruits in the autumn. We don't get them in the spring. So the farmer or the gardener has got to actually persevere, persevere and persevere. And when you're dealing with souls, the growth can be even slower than that. But it does have the effect. So the priest is sort of saying, well, sure, that's just the words I would use is magic. In other words, you say this prayer in hey presto, everything has changed. So Louisa remained doubtful and almost unwilling to write what she had said, because neither the priest nor herself realized the depth of what she had just said. That is in the message we've just finished. Then my beloved Jesus came, and I abandoned myself in his arms, and I poured out my whole heart to him. I told him what the confessor thought of it, and that in order to believe, they would want to see prodigious things like miracles. In other words, I call that hey presto or magic. Grace doesn't work like that. And my beloved Jesus, pressing me to himself as though wanting to dispel at his touch the doubts that were troubling me, he told me, "My daughter, have courage. Do not lose heart. If it were not necessary for you to write, I would not have obliged you to this sacrifice, because you know from volume one that she has not wanted to write at all." Okay, so it's a big, big sacrifice for her. You must know, and the you must know statements are actually quite important in all of this. You must know that each effect, each good, and each value that I make known to you about my will and what the creature can do by living in it are like many tastes, baits, magnets, foods, harmonies, fragrances, and lights. In other words, all of this is required to enable us to be able to operate more and more fruitfully in the divine will. Because when we started out on this journey, we weren't really talking all this practicality, were we? Because we had to sort of grasp something of what was being said. So I don't talk practicality until I feel that people are really able for it. And you don't force them to do something ahead of time. Just like with children, you begin with ABC. You don't begin with trigonometry. So every single thing that Jesus has said to her is some aspect of drawing us to come to be able to operate the divine will effectively. So each effect I speak to you about contains its own distinct property. Therefore, by not manifesting all the goods which are in my will and where the soul can reach. Now, that's what he was talking about in the last message, where the soul can reach. Because as Catholics and ordinary believers, all we know is that you say your rosary or you do your novena or whatever, and you hope for a response. It belongs to a different world altogether, where in a very small movement of your soul, you're affecting all humanity, past, present and future. So people living on the ordinary level of spirituality wouldn't know what you were getting at all. I tried that out with a fervent Christian who visited me. And I just made a prayer in the car when we were driving along, and she said to me, "That's funny praying. Never heard praying like that before. What are you getting at?" Because she was expecting the ordinary. This is not the ordinary. And I said, "I'm just sowing a seed. And if I can create curiosity in you, I won't respond to it now, but come back." I just left it with her. I said, "This is what the Lord's teaching us now." And she said, "I've never heard anybody ever pray like that before." And I said, "That's grand. Just sowing a seed." Okay. So where the soul can reach. In other words, entering into the divine will gives the soul real power to do things for souls and for God. But you have to be actually living in the divine will, not just saying prayers. So they show where the soul can reach by living in the divine will, and you would cause either a bait in order to capture them, which is what I was doing by saying that prayer, or a taste to attract them, or a magnet to draw them, or a food to satiate them to be missing. In other words, a grace that God had intended for them to receive wouldn't be received. So the perfect harmony, the pleasure of the fragrances, the light to guide them would be lacking. And not finding all possible goods, that is, not knowing them, they would not have the great yearnings to rise above all other things. Now, that's what's been happening to us as we've journeyed through these volumes, that the desire to move in this direction becomes greater and greater. And the desire to pray like this becomes greater and greater. The desire to understand it more becomes greater and greater. And that's what gets you on your feet. And that's why he talks about the necessity of the knowledge, that we need to understand it. So if they don't know them, they wouldn't have the great yearning to rise above all things in order to live in the divine will. Okay. So, and besides, do not worry about what you were told. My mother also contained my will as life, and yet the world continued in its course of evil. While we reach out to all souls, not all souls will be reached, simply because some are closed off, some are dead. Okay. And so at any particular moment, it's according to the disposition of souls. Okay. In nothing did it appear to be changed. Really colour the word appear. Because during the lifetime of our Blessed Mother, someone could have said to her, what use is it to the rest of us that you were born immaculate? All you're doing is you're living in that little house by yourself. You're minding your own little kitchen garden. You're minding your own little house and you're looking after your own little son. Of what use is that to us? You see, externally, it didn't appear. And yet she changed all history. So externally, it mightn't appear to us either that anything is happening, and yet it is. Is that okay? Not one external miracle came from her. And yet, what she did not do in the low world that's on the earth, she did in heaven with her Creator. By her continuous living in the divine will, she formed the place within herself. Now, notice the space. That you enter into this space, and it's this space, this world within us that we have to give God. I spoke about that at Mary's Hill, that we've got to give God this space to work in this void. Okay. So she formed the space within herself in order to draw the Word to become incarnate upon the earth. So she changed the destiny of mankind. So externally, her neighbours couldn't see any difference between her and everybody else. She was just a very nice lady. Okay. Internally, everything was different. So we have to understand that as far as the world is concerned, and even the people you're living with, they might call you a nice lady or a nice gentleman, but they won't understand at all what God is doing with you. And that's actually your safety. That's actually your safety. But she changed the destiny of mankind. She performed the greatest of miracles, which no one else had done or ever will do. She had a unique miracle, and it was to transport heaven upon the earth. Isn't that fantastic? So she was to bring heaven down to the earth to the point where the second person of the Blessed Trinity actually became man on the earth. For one who must do the greatest things, it's not necessary to do the lesser. Now, I think you should put VIP about 10 feet high on that one. Why? Because we're inclined to stay with the lesser things that we know and we're familiar with, instead of leaving the lesser things behind us and going only for the greater. But we find that very difficult. You know, in life there is good, better and best. Isn't that right? Mm-hmm. Now the enemy of the good is the better. Or the enemy of the better is the good, I should say. I said it backwards, didn't I? Because a person who is at the stage of the good won't want to let that go. Because I am better than other people. And so they may refuse to go on to the next stage. Now, but if they let the good go and receive the better, they're in a much higher place and can affect the human race very much more. And St. John of the Cross is very strong on this one. The enemy of the best is the better. We find it even harder to let go the better for the best. Okay. And so John of the Cross says that, and I'm giving it to you in my words now, I'm not giving it to you as an actual quotation. John of the Cross says that some people stop about 5 yards from the goal of union with God. They just won't take the best because they have the better. So that's why you have this very strong thing in St. Therese of Lisieux, that we go to God with empty hands. We're not clinging to what I was. I love that statement in that film, Ebenezer Scrooge, you know, I'm not the man I was. And I think we should be able to say that on a daily basis. I'm not the person I was. I'm actually in a different place, and I'm going forward, and I'm going to continue to go forward no matter where it takes me. I'm going to let the past go. And we should be able to actually look back and say, I am not actually the person I was last year. I've moved. Now, nobody else might notice except the Lord and yourself. And so we have to be very careful. Now, an example I would give you, and I hope I won't walk on people's corns because examples can be dangerous, you know. And that is that many people have come into the divine will through the charismatic renewal. The charismatic renewal was absolutely fantastic for getting people to know the Lord personally, getting repentance into their lives, getting conversion into their lives, reading scripture every day, getting them into adoration, and therefore getting them into a way of life that would actually prepare them to move on. Some of them can't move on. They hold on to what I know. And even people who have moved on can have the temptation to go back and do things that way, even now. And that's the thing in us, that we find it extremely difficult to let go and to let God. So there's much more in this than we realise. So you will find, therefore, that in the divine will ministry, it's all interior. It's not exterior. But the people at the other level will tell you, oh, but you should be doing this project and you should be doing that project and you should be involved in this, and you should be involved in that, you should be involved in the other. We've been lifted up onto a different plane where all the work is interior. All of Louise's work was interior, wasn't it? What did she do externally apart from her embroidery? Nothing. Nothing. She was called to the greatest, so everything else had to go. Now, we find that difficult to take on board. We understand it theoretically, but practically is a different subject. Okay, so I want to leave that with you because that's a very important movement point. and Jesus said, and yet, who knew anything of what my mother was actually doing? The answer is nobody. Only Jesus. And Joseph knew something. And yet, what she did with the Eternal One in order to obtain the great portent of the descent of the word into the midst of creatures. I mean, just look at what she actually did. It was known only that she was the cause of it by few at my conception, by many when they saw me breathe my last on the cross. It was only when Jesus actually died on the cross and they declared him, it was his executioner who declared him a son of God, that the divinity was actually seen. Now, what was it on the cross that made people's eyes open? It was his humility, his patience, his kindness, his love, his concern for his neighbour, his massive forgiveness of his enemies. Everybody knew this is not human. This is not, just human. This is not normal. And to die in complete surrender to God, complete love, complete forgiveness to everybody else. They said, this one is a son of God. This is completely different. And so he said that it was only in his dying that they began to realize who he was. And yet some of them didn't see it. like the scribes and Pharisees didn't apparently see it. My daughter, Jesus said, the greater the good that I want to do in the soul, and this good must descend for the good of the human generations and must bring me complete glory, the more I draw her to myself. Now, the greater the mission that's given to you, the more the Lord wants to draw you to himself. And therefore, for us living in the divine will, there's no way out of not being in union with God. The divine will thing means union with God. It has to be. And if you're living in union with God, you're living on a different sphere to everybody around you. Okay? So the more I draw her to myself and I make this good mature, I make it mature and season between the soul and me. I segregate her from everybody. Oh dear. That's what he did with his Blessed Mother. That's what he did with Louisa. Now he can't do that completely with us because you're in a family and you're living family life and so on. But in a sense, he does. Because you'll find that the neighbours won't know what language you talk unless you find what language they talk and try to join them for a while. Otherwise, you don't have a language in common. You don't have interests in common. You don't have a life in common. You don't have anything in common. So in actual fact, you're segregated. And therefore, the people living at this level have a very great need for fellowship with each other. Have you noticed? Mm-hmm. In order that you find someone at your own level. And it becomes greater and greater, this need to actually fellowship with somebody who actually understands the road you're on. I segregate her from everyone. I make her ignored. I love that one. I love that one. Notice the I make her. That's the bit I would underline if it was me. I make her. In other words, the Lord makes sure that you're isolated sufficiently for your safety. It's for your safety, your spiritual safety. Because if the others don't ignore you, they'll attack you. And you're not strong enough for that. You won't be able to do what he wants if you're being attacked all the time. I make her ignored. And when my will wants her to draw close to some other creature, it takes all my power in order for her to submit to the sacrifice. Now, he's talking about Louisa. She doesn't want anybody visiting her and everything, as you know. Therefore, let your Jesus do and calm yourself. Okay. Now, the next paragraph is a very important paragraph, and it answers the question about people who doubt about living in the divine will. So just give yourself a heading. Answer to those who doubt about living in the divine will. And there are many. Don't know if you've met them. Okay. So Louisa said, my Jesus, they are right. They are the priests who are very doubtful about what Louisa is talking about. They say that they see no evidence, they see no positive good, and this is all just words. That's a most wonderful, wonderful statement, because that is exactly what the unbelievers will say. It's all words. Or as they say in Ireland, it's all mouth. You know, it's all just words. And she said, I don't really want anything. All I want is to do as you yourself want. And that I do your most holy will, and that what passes between you and me remain as a secret in our hearts. Now, that's not what he wants. So she's saying, listen, I'm being badgered by these people who say that this is all rubbish. And then I'm being badgered by you saying I have to do it. So I'm opting for your side. You know, can we just keep this quiet? Can we keep it secret? And Jesus said, ah, my daughter, would you like if I had worked my redemption in secret with my celestial father and my dear mother who was to conceive me, and then nobody else would even know? Because if nobody knew, were they going to respond? No, it had to be proclaimed. Would we have acknowledged her Immaculate Conception if she hadn't told us? She had to tell us. She herself had to tell us. As great as a good might be, if it's not known, it does not produce life. It does not multiply, it's not loved, and it's not imitated. You have to know. Isn't that how the advertising works? That you dangle something in front of a person and you didn't know you wanted that thing until you saw it. You know, as I used to say in the past, I've been cured, thanks be to God, that you'd walk past a shop and you'd see this magnificent blouse or something in the window, and all of a sudden you would have 10 reasons for buying that, but you had none before you saw it. Do you know how to get cured of that? You walk past a shop and you say, thanks be to God, I need nothing. And I do that, walking past, I'm sure people think I'm mad. Thanks be to God, I need nothing. I need nothing. I need nothing. And I'm blessing them all. I need nothing. And I walk out of a shopping centre needing nothing. And sometimes I forget to buy what I went in for. But because I needed the exercise. You see, the exercise was getting free of the advertising. Getting free of what they put the nicest cake in the window, you see.
Of course.
And the, sorry?
They didn't do this exactly for you anyway.
So it's actually very important for us to get free, you know. But if redemption hadn't been proclaimed to us, we wouldn't be Christian. If Patrick never came to Ireland, we wouldn't have been a Christian country. If the apostles hadn't gone out and proclaimed the word, nothing would have happened. They had to go. The church, it's an official teaching of the church that the church exists to evangelize. That is, to spread the good news. So if they had not known, then nothing would have happened. So my redemption would have been without any effect on creatures. My daughter, let them talk and let me do. I love that. How about that for a divine response to the naysayers? Isn't that fantastic? Let them talk and let me do. Do not be concerned, but do everything that I did while being on the earth, both internal and external, which, of course, is not yet known to the church. Nor has it received its full and desired fruit, especially in my hidden life. You see, Louisa is the first, so how could anybody know? Creatures knew almost nothing of all that I did, and yet it served in an admirable and prodigious way before my divine Father in order to prepare and mature the fruit of redemption. So he's talking about all the years in Nazareth. Okay. And of course, the hours of the Passion give you an insight into that and all the other passages in Louisa's writings. However, on the outside, so first of all, we had it with Blessed Mother, that on the outside, as far as the world was concerned, she was just living a normal life. On the outside, I too lived beside creatures as ignored, poor, abject and despised. But this meant nothing because before my Father, I was who I was. This is terribly important. So in the divine will, we get completely free of other people's opinions. It actually doesn't matter. And you completely disarm them if somebody says, but you're a nobody. I say, you're dead right. And they don't know what to do then, because their desire to put you down didn't work because you were already down. So they've no power to get at you. But in the eyes of God, you are who you are in the divine will. That's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. Before my Father, I was who I was, and in my interior works, and my interior works opened seas of light, grace, peace, forgiveness between heaven and earth. This is what was actually going on. And that's why he's trying to show us how to have this extraordinary ministry between heaven and earth as well. The fact that he would invite little creatures like us to participate at all, I think is beyond amazing. My interest, he said, was to open heaven. So what we've got to do is ask ourselves, in a way, I'm helping you to meditate on this. My question is that we must ask ourselves, what is my interest in all of this? Jesus said, my interest was to open heaven. So if I am participating in this divine life, what is my interest? What do I have to do? Each one of us has to respond to that. And the more clear you are as to what you actually want to accomplish, the more you will accomplish it. That's like saying, if I would like to be a pilot, if my interest was in flying, then I will apply for training. Then I will go through the training. Then I will go through the testing and I'll do it. But if I have no interest in it, I won't go down that direction. So I have to know, what is it? Where do you want to put your energy? And the more clearly we can answer that, the better, because you will grow much faster. So my interest was to open heaven, which had been closed for centuries. I love the centuries, you'd have to say millennia, for the good of the earth, and that my Father would look with love upon creatures. Now, look at that statement, that my Father would look with love. Now, when you read the Old Testament, you're reading the time that is usually called the time of wrath or the time of justice. So God was dealing with people in justice. In the New Testament, Jesus brought the fact that God would deal with us in love. The covenant of Moses was a covenant of justice. So you get the blessings and the curses of the covenant. You come to the covenant of Jesus and it's all love. And knowing the Gentiles, as he did, he didn't put any conditions. I think that's very interesting, don't you? He was able to give lots of conditions to the Jewish people for the covenant of Moses, and they signed up. But you couldn't get a Gentile to sign up. So he gave us an unconditional covenant. We don't seem to realise what he actually did. So I wanted to open heaven and that my Father would look with love upon creatures. So looking with love was therefore the New Testament era being opened. Just write New Testament era beside that. Once this was done, the rest would come by itself. In other words, the whole machinery would go into action. So was this not a great good? Rather, it was everything. It was the yeast, the preparation and the foundation for redemption. And yet, externally, what people saw in Jesus in Nazareth was that he was a carpenter. And he was just doing small nothings, you know. So I think that's terribly important, because in everybody's eyes, including your own, you'll be doing nothing. You know, because people will say, if you want to be religious, well, you should be doing this and you should be doing that and you should be doing that. But all the activities are for that middle level, not for the top level. The top level is contemplative. It's interior. Is that okay? So Jesus continues then, it is the same with you. What he said about Mary and what he said about Jesus, the same with Louisa. She's sitting in a bed. It seems as if she's doing nothing. The priests are only hearing all these words coming out of her. And where is it going? You know, I mean, what effect is it having? Because we are in 1924. They've just got over World War I and all the powers are working hard to have World War II. And so if all of this transformation can take place, the priests are saying to her, well, why is the world getting worse? Okay. So it's, you can see where they're coming from and where the Lord is coming from and why there would be this problem in between. So it's the same with you. It's necessary that I place the yeast of my will and that I form the preparation, that I lay the foundations, and that there be the highest accord between you and me, between my interior acts and yours. Now, this is very important. What The church already knew about the external passion. The church already knew about the external redemption. But the church hadn't known about the internal passion of Jesus and the internal workings of redemption. And that's what's coming through Louisa. So, in order to open the heaven to new grace and to new currents, and to dispose the supreme majesty to concede the greatest grace, that his will be known upon the earth, is number one, and live, number two, in the midst of creatures with its full dominion as in heaven. So it must be known is number one, and number two, able to live among us, because it's one thing to know something, it's quite another thing to actually live. Okay. And while you occupy yourself with this, do you think that the earth receives no good? Now, he's tried to tell her very eloquently, in fact, the extraordinary effect that she has had on the world, because there were chastisements held back and all this kind of thing. But you can't expect the priests to know that. They can't see anything. And they don't know that it's sort of this amount of chastisement was organised and you only got this amount. They can't see that. That's only seen from heaven. And so you can understand that the priests think that there's nothing practical coming out of this. So the divine will wants to come and actually live among us. And while you occupy yourself with this, oh yeah, do you think that the earth receives no good? You're actually wrong. The generations are running on a vertiginous decline to evil. Vertiginous, the dictionary says, is dizzy. Dizzy. In other words, we would say a headlong fall. Okay. And who is it that sustains them? Who prevents them from being submerged in their dizzy race to the point of disappearing from the face of the earth? So it's a flood of evil that Jesus is talking about, that evil seems to be running wild upon the earth. And the priests cannot see how this is happening at all, that Louisa is making any difference. Remember that not too long ago, the sea broke its boundaries under the earth. Notice under the earth, so you're talking about an earthquake with a tsunami. Okay. But if you go to Revelation 12:15, St. John speaks about a flood of evil. And so the Lord seems to be referring to what's going on in the world. It's only 1924. Can you imagine? Long before you and I were ever heard of, that the world was already experiencing a flood of evil. And so this, the sea therefore would threaten to swallow entire cities. And your own town is in great danger as well. Now, that's very interesting, because I think Corato is north of Rome, is it? Is it north of Rome or south? South of Rome, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Because Naples, the Bay of Naples, has several volcanoes around it, and they've been measuring the volcanic activity there for 30 years that I know of. And they know that when one of these volcanoes goes, the whole lot of them will go, and literally millions will die in minutes. And the latest thing that I've heard is that Vesuvius is ready to blow. And it hasn't blown since 79 AD. But when it does, all these others will blow as well. And you know that the Bay of Naples is a submerged city, do you? It has happened before. You can look at this up on YouTube. They actually show you it's a submerged city, the bay itself. And so this disaster is waiting to happen. I think it's very interesting. It's more than interesting, you know. And you know, in Vesuvius they've built their homes up to the mouth of the crater. So there's no way the Italian authorities have actually admitted there's no way that these people can be saved if it blows. No way at all. And they estimate about 3 million would die in the first 10 minutes. So you're talking about a disaster of monumental proportions. Now, they've been watching that for years, and it's one of the areas that they're really concerned about. So she said, who stopped the scourge the last time? Who made the waters stop and enclose themselves within their boundaries? This is precisely the great scourge that is preparing for the ugly, vertiginous race of creatures. I don't know where the translator gets these words. Now, watch this. He's going to tell us, this is 1924, okay? So it's a century ago that nature is already in revolt against the human race. And nature has been in revolt against the human race for the whole of the 20th century, because the chastisements that were given increased in number and in ferocity for every single decade of the 20th century. And we're so used to them now that we're not even affected by a disaster. We don't have any emotional response to a disaster. Did you react emotionally to hearing about the blow up in the Philippines? No, we've already long since gone into emotional fatigue about disasters. It can no longer touch us. It's actually quite frightening. We're just so used to it. So he said, nature itself is tired of so many evils and would want to take revenge on the rights of its creator. Now, put beside that, just put CF, that is refer to Romans 8:19. In Romans 8:19, we're told, St. Paul tells us, that the whole of creation is looking for the true sons of God to turn up, because that's when nature itself will be cured. But this is 1924, and nature is in revolt against humanity. That's why I just put CF on it. Just compare this text with this one. Okay. But I also want to give you Job 38, verses 8 to 11, where the Lord speaks about the creation and about him putting a boundary on the waters of the earth. So nature is tired of so many evils and would want to take revenge for the rights of its creator. All natural things would want to place themselves against man. Why? Because the divine will is in everything. And everything has the divine will. It's man who is revolting against the divine will. So therefore, nature is treating man as an enemy. Isn't that interesting? So nature would want to take revenge for the rights of the creator. All natural things would want to place themselves against man, the sea, the fire, the wind, the earth. And we're seeing this terribly punishing fire in Australia. Definitely chastisement. They are about to go out of their boundaries to harm and strike the generations. Now notice he says the sea, the tsunamis, the fire, okay, the wind in the hurricanes, and the hurricanes have been increasing in number and in ferocity. Okay. And does it seem trivial to you that while the human race is immersed in irreparable evils, that means definitely needing chastisement if they want to avoid eternal punishment? Okay, a chastisement is a correction in the system. I call you, and raising you between earth and heaven and earth, and identifying you with my own acts, I make you run within my will to prepare the act opposite to the many evils that flood the earth. Now, look at this. This is extremely important. It's another aspect of the divine will vocation. St. Paul said in Romans 5:21, where sin abounds, grace doth even more abound. So he gets us to do the opposite acts that he sees that they are doing. Okay, it's Romans 5:21. And I also give you Romans 5:15. So he said, I get you to fuse in my will and to do the opposite acts that the others are doing. to prepare the opposite of so many evils that flood the earth, preparing good, trying to conquer man with my love so as to stop him from this dizzy race, giving him the greatest thing, which is the light of my will. Now, do you see why I send shafts of light into them? Giving them the light of my will, so that by knowing it, he may take it as food in order to restore his lost strength, so that strengthened, he might desist from his recklessness and reacquire a firm step so as to no longer fall into evils. Now, because of time, I'm going to stop. This is one of the longest messages we have, and there's another whole section to it. So I think we should stop there because it was quite rich tonight. Mm-hmm.